You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Cab. It's Collateral Confessions. A little digression. Now, a whole show that we do within Miami Nice with my undercover partner, Katie Walsh. This time, she's out of her undercover world. She's in a gray suit, made in Thailand, and she's in the back of the seat, you know, waxing lyrical about Nietzsche and mansplaining jazz. We love it. I'm just driving this cab around.
I'm flashing my hundos.
Flashing five cheeky hundos. Look, just like the world of Uber Pool today, we have another passenger. She's a best-selling author of the Supernatural Sisters series. She's an award-winning podcaster, not for Josie and the Podcats or It Came From the Deep, which is a breakdown of her great book, but for The Phantom Never Dies. She's got a great new thriller set inside of a radio station called Graveyard Shift, which is on its way out, and is the author of Mockingbird Strikeout. Yes, she's writing for the Marvels over here. She just woke up, ladies and gentlemen. She is as unhinged as Russell Crowe, and she sounds like him. Maria Lewis, welcome to Collateral Confessions.
Yo, homie, is that my briefcase? Fuck! Let's go!
So
I can't believe it's taken this long for the three of us to get into a cab.
Oh, so exciting.
I can actually. Just because I'm not the biggest Michael Mann girly like you guys are, and Collateral's my baby.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
You guys to work through fucking 6 hours of Black Hat and then 12 hours of fucking Miami Vice on a fucking speedboat and shit. And I'm like, when are we getting to Collateral? Huh? When are we getting there? Where's BD coming up?
So yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say.
You have had the experience of me driving you around LA.
Yeah,
I was actually okay. So funny you bring that up, because as I was doing a little sneaky rewatch of Collateral last night, well, really this morning, but I was recontextualizing it with my not so like long ago trip to LA where you were driving me around and we went to a sick Angels FC game. Angels!
I think it maybe sounded like this.
Yeah, Katie.
Yes, Blake has it on a fucking soundbar.
I have it on the soundboard. I have permanently put that on the soundboard.
So good. But that's what I was thinking about. The bit where we went into that dodgy, but actually in hindsight, quite lovely car park run by two gentlemen who were just freelancing out there on a Saturday night. That
just
little
put two chairs in front of a lot. They were like, not that was not official parking at all. They just said, give us $40.
But you know what? They were like, give us $40, but they also protected us from smackies. And I felt like that $40 actually got you quite far because it got you the Road Warrior bit. It got you parked in by 86 cars, which was funny for like 10 minutes. And then it also protected us from smackies. So that was great. But that little underpass that we came off a highway and then under an underpass. This is one of the things I fucking love so much about Collateral, but specifically this Michael Mann film, is I love somebody who really understands a city. And you see it,
yeah, hate to say, sure.
In Heat. You see it really well in Heat, where he's like, when he does that little scene, the shootout scene at the drive-in cinema, right? And the specificity of like hitting those bumps and those divots and those bumps and those divots. And like, you could have just fucking shot that anywhere, but he chose to shoot it there. And then the physicality of the place impacts the scene. And Collateral for me is the best example of that from him, because the parts of LA he's showing you, you really have to know that city, or you really have to have spent time there to understand like what little, even like the little road bridge he uses is like, such a great weird visual. I feel like it's the thing boys, little fucking gritty film boys, have been trying to do ever since, because they watch something like Collateral with a Sammy Chubb and they're like, man, it's True Detective season 2. They're like, you know what's great? LA, it's gritty. And you know what I mean, there's something under the glamour, and everyone's like, okay.
Well, what I love about Collateral as someone who lives in LA is that it gets the geography absolutely right. Like when he picks up Tom Cruise and he says, how long is it going to take to this, you know, place? And he says 7 minutes or eight minutes, whatever he says. And like, as knowing, I'm like, yeah, that sounds right. And then when they go to Club Fever and they just like rattle off the street names, it's like, oh, you know, it's in K-Town. You show up, it's like a Korean club. So I think there's a lot of movies that are shot in LA where they're like chasing someone through downtown and then suddenly they're like running through Venice and you're like, there's no way that they could, you know, connect these two spaces together, but they're just doing it through movie magic. But Michael Mann is like, no, I want to be really rigorous about the geography of this place.
Yeah,
which I appreciate.
You also see it in Tokyo Vice, like there's a real sense when he chooses a place to shoot, there's a real sense of him, it's not just something that he researches, it's a place that he's embedded himself in. And Blake, I know when you were talking to him, he was saying that he's like, oh yeah, we're ready to shoot Tokyo Vice or whatever. Just been living there for the past few years. And it's like, when you watch that show, it feels like it. It's not somebody showing you the same old Japan, even though, is it, what's his fucking name? Engel Inslaw, whatever. Baby Driver.
Just say Baby Driver.
Even though, sorry, Blake, I hit his weak spot. He's gonna look.
When she mispronounces names of things, hey Katie, it's my kink. I'm sorry, because she's so fucking smart. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met. She's such a hard worker. Oh my god, is she a brilliant writer? But literally, she is Bill the Butcher of fucking murdering people's names. She just murders them, and you're like, how did you? I know she can read, like she's read speeches and I know she can write, but she just does magic with these words. And it's like a bit, and it's not a bit. It's the best. Anyway, sorry. It's my weakness. She's right.
Well, when fucking Baby Driver's chopping it up in Tokyo, it's like, yes, he, even though he's like, he's the djinn, he's the white guy navigating through that city. So he's the vessel for the audience. But as the other characters from the ensemble are brought into the fold, the parts of Tokyo that you're seeing are very specific. And very like, not like locals only per se, but it's just like, you've never seen the city quite, you've never seen a city the way Michael Mann sees a city. And it's one thing I always look forward to about his movies, even though I do know like, all right, I'll see you guys next week. Like, it's going to take a while. But when I'm sitting down, whatever place we are geographically, like, I'm really going to feel it because of the way he experiences places and the way he knows, because he's a fucking, like, one of the greats, because of the way he knows how to make that feeling interpret on screen for an audience.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, he finds those little details of cities that feel lived in or, you know, not even under the radar, but just like you'd have to know the place really well to experience it that way.
Yeah, Blake, what about, in Mr. In Between, one of our favorite shows.
Yes.
Have
you seen Mr. In Between, Katie?
I haven't.
Okay, terrific.
Love it.
Terrific Sydney-based show about a hitman who's just a single dad. And so he lives like a life where he looks after his daughter and he sort of moonlights as a security person at a nightclub, strip club sort of deal, but he's also a paid hitman. And it's a terrific show, like this complete auteurist vision. It's amazing. And literally last night I was picking up pizza from our favorite pizza shop near us, De Pizza Maria. I was picking up pizza from my favorite shop.
What I wouldn't give for that garlic cheese situation right now. Fucking, I would make love to it. Sorry.
But we were walking through a local suburb near me, which is called Padstow. And there's literally an alleyway when you walk down that the lead character in Mr. In Between beats up two guys and one of the guys runs away. Like, I've walked down it all the time. I'm like, oh, this is where he beat up those guys. This is awesome. Like, it's like such a specific suburb in Sydney where it's like, it is a nice kind of residential area. It's very multi-ethnic. It's a great area, but also we're not far away from trouble. And so it makes sense that this guy would operate in this area. So like, it's such a deep, like it's the deepest cuts of Sydney. Like you haven't seen in, I think, a really long time or maybe ever.
And that's again, like, you know, film boys with a semi-chub watching stuff, but like I really do get the impression that the Edgerton brothers love Michael Mann in that way, because it's not just Mr. In Between, although I think Mr. In Between's the best example of it, and obviously so much of that is Scott Ryan, but and David Michaud and stuff as well. But The Square, their directorial debut, there's a scene where two characters are having an affair under a bridge right near Blake's house. And it's like, you have to know the city so well. And the opening shot of Mr. In Between is the main character throwing a guy down a set of stairs for essentially like fucking up a bet. And those stairs are the pedestrian stairs that are usually guarded by a security guard for the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And you never fucking see the Sydney Harbour Bridge, but, and the only way you know those stairs is if you're on foot walking underneath it at water level around Darling Harbour and shit. And it's like, I'm sorry, Circular Quay and shit. And it's like that, the restraint to be an Australian show with American financing from FX, that they're really like throwing their pussy behind it to go international and to not show the Sydney Harbour Bridge, but to utilize the steps to them. I was like, oh, okay, they're really giving a shit about the story here. In contrast to another of Michael Mann's favorite films, Power Rangers 1996, which is set in Los Angeles, but filmed in Sydney. And they have this scene where the kids are having a fucking school like rollerblading competition. And where the rollerblading competition is literally in between the fucking opera house and the Sydney Harbour Bridge, set in LA. And so you could see them both in the same shot. And I'm like, you could have, Pete, the world over is set in Australia. Like, you can pretty much shoot Australia for anything, genuinely. That's part of the reasons it's such a sought after filming location. And so it's very diverse physically, but also like in urban environments, very diverse as well. the one thing you really can't do if you're trying to pass off Sydney for another place is put either the Sydney Harbour Bridge or the Opera House, let alone both.
I know. Is this the one directed by Brian Spicer?
Which sure, one? If you said the, I haven't really kept track of the directors.
I'm just saying he should go. He should be in jail. He should be in director jail.
Director jail. but yes,
so Marty Scott, Morphin is the one. Yeah.
Yeah, so but okay. Scott FX in the US, Mr. In Between. Scott Ryan is the engine behind the show. The Edgerton brothers, Nash particularly, directs a bunch of the episodes and helped to co-write some of it. But Scott was like the main engine of it. Amazing guy. I had a chance to talk to him with our friend Jen Johans and Jed Ayres and our buddy Rob Belushi. So that was super fun. And we were just all gushing at him. He's such an amazing guy. And like this whole great series just like fell out of his brain and it's just terrific. So yeah, really top show if you haven't had a chance to see it.
Speaking of cocaine gremlins, like we're going to talk about fucking Mark Ruffalo being on one. In Blake. I hijacked the conversation.
No,
I can
that's
see-
good. We love our former coke felon Rob Belushi in our family. He's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. And the other day it was the anniversary of Goodfellas coming out, and he's like, "Hey, coke felons, this is our day." I was like, "Okay."
You guys know that I went to college with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I went to college with
have
Rob.
You gone and got, have
I know
you,
the ha, era.
Have you gotten pizza? Oh, my God.
We haven't gotten pizza yet.
You
got to
get pizza with Rob.
But also,
Katie, wait, can we just stop? Are you telling me that the early 2000s Katie that we've seen in some of those, like, Facebook and Instagram flashback photos with the denim, that was the era? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
Katie was in her thought era and fucking Rob was out here playing, what's the guy from Goodfellas with the eyes who just passed away?
Ray Liotta.
Rob was in his
driving the car
chaos
looking at the
era.
Helicopter.
I'm gonna say with love and respect, Rob was in his chaos era.
She's chaos.
And I did date one of his frat brothers.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Where's the podcast about this?
I know.
Jeez, talk about a collateral confession.
None of this can be recorded. None of this can be recorded. We can do the Zoom, but it cannot be recorded or released. Let me just say that.
Funny. Oh, holy shit. Fuck, not a frat brother. I have so much respect for you, Rob.
Kai Sai. They got kicked off the campus because of their substance problems.
Oh my God, it literally sounds like the plot for Bad Neighbors. Well, I think it was just called Neighbors for you guys.
Yeah, but... Neighbors, yes. Yeah. Yes. They lost their house. Anyway.
This is literally the plot of fucking Neighbors, and there's Zac Efron and Dave Franco.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and one was Rob Belushi, and one was the guy that I dated for like a month.
Wow.
Anyway, we digress.
You know what? I'm here for it. I'm so here for this digression. All right, let's speaking of deep cuts and in the cut, Mark Ruffalo. So in this movie, so we've watched, this is the thing about Maria. So this is why I was so excited to get her on the show, Katie, is because like obviously she knows I'm a man head. She lived with me, she was on the entire journey with us and everything like that. And now that everyone who likes One Heat Minute tells her that they love Heat and that they love the show, and she gets so sick of it. And it's one of my great pleasures of her going like, shut up about this movie. But when we lived together, as it happens, I don't know what the licensing agreement was between Paramount. Maybe it was a pre-Paramount Plus thing, but definitely on Netflix, pretty much permanently while we lived together during the pandemic and around there, Collateral was just on Netflix. Mm. And so you do that thing where you cycle through the doldrums of like your recommended shit and it's all just garbage and you're like, oh my God, what is this? And so then you just see like, would you like to watch Collateral again? And so I'd just be sitting in the lounge room and I'd go, and Maz would be usually working on a laptop, and I'd just go ding and put it on, and my wife would get annoyed because, oh my God, here comes Collateral or here comes Jack Reacher for the 80th time with you two morons. And we'd both just be sitting there smiling, very happy, very satisfied. Like, yeah, this is this is what's happening because it's the time of day. So we watched it quite a bit together and it was awesome. Like now discovering that we do the show together, Katie, I know that Collateral's your favorite. I was excited to talk to Maz. But like, you've watched it a million times. So I just want to lead you anywhere. You talked about Ruffalo before. Let's get cracking with like, where is it really vibing for you right now, Collateral? Because I know you like it as a machine, as a storyteller, as a screenwriter, as you are, but like, where is it really vibing for you right now as you're traveling with it?
Well, firstly, just to talk about One Heat Minute real briefly, it's not just like that people come up to me like, I love the show. It's oftentimes even more annoying in the context of work. It's like the greatest fucking Australian filmmakers or screenwriters or producers who are like, no, I fucking love, or it's someone you're trying to shag. And they're like, oh my God, you know what's crazy? Not like mid-coitus, but like, in, you know, in the fucking wine and dine in 69 stage, they'll be like, man, your best mate's sick. He's fucking One Heat Minute show sick. I'm like, sure, absolutely. And I agree. That's what's so annoying. But it's just been said to me so many times. It's like turning me against you. But also the amount of people now, because it's canon, that I have a real appreciation for Heat now that I did not have before you doing the show. And but I, you know, it's still not something I would like consensually revisit, unlike a Collateral, even a Black Hat, to be fair.
Consensually revisit.
Well, you just fucking put it on all the time in your house. And I'm like, ah, fuck, not again. Here we go. We get it. Crime is pain. Anyway. But
did you just say crime is pain?
Yeah, yeah. But with
title of them.
Usually it's Katie that comes up with the titles, but the crime is pain is the one.
But with the Heat 2 stuff happening, it's become this bit where it's like, hell yeah, Maria doesn't love Heat. I don't even know this woman. Let me like hit her up with all these Heat 2 updates. I get a text a day probably from someone with some shit about Heat 2, or like a tweet minimum 3 to 4 a week with some stuff about Heat 2. I know more about this fucking movie than I've ever wanted to know in my goddamn life, because people think it's so funny to send me Heat 2 updates because they're like, ha ha ha. Part of the bit.
Trolls.
We'll be right back after.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This quick break. Collateral, what's vibing with you?
It's his shortest film, as far as I'm aware. Is that correct? You guys are the real man heads. What's shorter?
Yeah, I think...
Is Mohicans?
Mohicans, it's close. It's Mohicans, Collateral. Like, you have to really go back and go, like, Jericho Mar, like, 96 minutes or something like that, maybe, like, yeah, technically the shortest. But as far as, like, his more recent outputs, it's the only one that is sub 2 hours.
Yeah, because it's basically, like, 2 hours, but, you know, once you subtract credits and shit. And even then, still, as I was watching it and, you know, I'm always doing that thing where I'm like, if this was me, what would I change? What would I tinker? And Collateral is truly like one of my great rewatchable films that I just revisit all the time.
So rewatchable.
And so, yes, yeah, so rewatchable. And so there's few things I would change, but I think you could shave 15 minutes and really not lose much of the source. But that is the thing that really sticks with me. Is it like, it is in, it's out. You still have all of these like very like man core deep conversations about the meaning of life through the prism of crime. But then you also have this whole like the fucking, these people just popping in for scenes and bits like Javier Bardem. Is it Javier Bardem, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Okay, it's cool. It's him just, it's him like 3 minutes before fucking No Country. It's like his first big English language film before No Country.
And you have your Javier Bardems. You have Peter Berg, for fuck's sake.
Peter Berg, who could care less about being in this movie.
Dude, so he's hilarious. Like, guys, I've got to make fucking another film with Mark Wahlberg, dusty as fuck, carrying an AK-47. So let me clear this check and let me get that shit in development. But Taylor Kitsch is waiting. But it also has like the very slick, oily Mark Ruffalo. It has Jada Pinkett in one of my favorite Jada Pinkett's.
I think she's best in her two best movies for me. And I know this is like a weird thing to say. I mean, maybe like Matrix Reloaded or something like that. But like two of her best movies in her this part of her career are like Ali, where she's amazing as Muhammad Ali's first wife with Will Smith. And then with Michael Mann in this, she's fucking awesome in Collateral. Unbelievably good.
Yeah. 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 It's one thing I really appreciate about Michael Mann is he's always putting like seamlessly and not in a tokenistic way, but he's always putting women of different ethnicities into his movies in ways that are contextual and make sense. But it's also like, it's never something that's done in a way that's like, look what I've done, because his whole, all yeah. of his worlds and his movies about authenticity. But I can just see this just like any other film, not any other filmmaker, let's say any other white straight filmmaker, that Jada Pinkett role is going to like an early career Jessica Chastain or something. You know what I mean? And the fact that it's her and the fact that Jamie Foxx and her have such great chemistry, and their chemistry is between fucking like a taxi visor is crazy. Like just like, basically, that's hard chemistry to have, her behind him, him in front. I know it's a movie set and shit, so you can like, you know, you're having shots that cut back and forth, but just
that
the way
feels like the Red Room. You know, it's just the chemistry's on fire.
But that's the shit I love, is like how tight it feels, how there's no wasted, well, there's very minimal wasted time, the situationship, the geography of it, and the final act, I guess you could say, it's kind of got the mechanics of a slasher. Like, you know, you're Michael Myers and Laurie Strode through a house. But though it's a fucking LA skyscraper, so you can see bits and bobs, is such a fucking cool mechanism and such a great visual when you can see the whole city outside the window but you can't get help is just so brilliant. It's just like such an awesome set piece to end on. I just, yeah, this movie is like a real, it's a grower, not a shower, and that it just hits the dial and just keeps slowly turning, 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 turning. And I love that about it. It's one of my, it's my favorite Michael Mann movie, I think, by quite a way.
Yeah, it's my favorite too. I mean, aside from Heat, sorry.
I was like, we always say like,
Heat's number one, and then
it's fine. It, like I mean, there was a time when Maria was like, "Give me Diane Venora's bangs in The Jackal over your shitty Heat movie any day." And so we've evolved past that. So this is okay. Like, I'm, yeah. If people have their favorite, people have their favorite mans. And it doesn't always have to be Heat. And this is what I would reveal to everyone is like, there are sometimes, because obviously you two know better than anyone else how much I'm a journalism movie head, that I could watch The Insider. I could watch The Insider, and in the moment I'm watching it, it is my favorite Michael Mann movie. You know what I mean? Because it's just it coalesces so many of my interests. And like actors and style and everything. It's just like, there are some times where you can watch a movie, and there's been times with watching Miami Vice, I'm like, maybe this is my favorite because it's so big and brash and it's out there. And you know, and definitely had those moments with Collateral too. So I don't begrudge anyone for like, oh, I don't know what my favorite is, or my favorite is something different than Heat. It's okay. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
You have to be in a mood.
The problem with Heat is that men just like it so much. And I just find myself like immediately resisting that on every level.
So the problem with Heat is not the movie, but the fans.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Is what you're saying. It's
fucking so annoying about it.
No, but it's like, it's like when people don't quite understand like Martin Scorsese movies or something, it's like the problem is not the Scorsese movies. The problem is like the people discoursing about it. But
yes, it's like that. If you go home with someone and you go into their house and they've got a Pulp Fiction poster on the wall, you're like, oh, fucking here we go.
That hasn't happened just... since I was an undergrad.
And Katie's like, when I was an undergrad, it happened every week. You know, it happened.
She was the Pulp Fiction poster. Little Bob and a little bit of like fucking adrenaline in her heart.
Katie could totally rock a Pulp Fiction cosplay. But anyway, so...
I did. I was actually, when I dated Rob's frat brother, I wore that costume, the Uma Thurman costume for Halloween. I think there's like a photo of us.
The cocaine years, baby.
Okay. Rob will listen to this. Rob, Katie's coming on Too Much Movie to talk about Pulp Fiction with you, Chris Candy, and I.
Oh my God.
And she's going to wear that outfit again. We're going to try and get her in the outfit.
Oh my God, I have to find a wig.
Yeah, we'll get you a wig. Oh my God.
You got to find a wig and a coke dealer, and you guys are on.
Yeah, we're off to the races.
But I love Collateral for all of the reasons that you just described. Like, I've talked about this before, but like when the body hits the car, when the body hits the car.
When the body hits the car. When the body hits the car. Sorry, I had to back you up.
Thank you. It's like minute 18. And at that point, like we already are invested in this relationship between Jada and Jamie. We're already invested in, we already know we've seen this thing with Vincent Collateral. We know he's like going to start killing people now. So it's like, it's just
we're
the
seeing
economy
Jamie Foxx,
of storytelling.
Jamie Foxx speaking in Spanish to like where he fills up his car for petrol. There's that great Debbie Mazur and Bodie Elfman argument, which is the two young professionals in the back of the cab. Like, oh, you did this. Right. And she's like putting on makeup and she's like ripping into him. I'm like, oh, I love Debbie Mazur. She's so good. She's good in everything. But like just that 2 seconds, like I could watch that 100 times. Like it's that great people watching element. You've had it. Like it's literally, you've had it all in 18 minutes. And he's just looking at this, you know, town car brochure, and then bang, and the sandwich. I love the sandwich and the lettuce and all this stuff, just like
catapulting exactly.
through the car. It's like, it's that second you're like, oh my God, this is so great. And obviously we had Jason Statham at the beginning as well. You've had it all. Like,
yes, right? The Jason Statham at the beginning is really testament to, like, you know, some people are born with it, some people aren't. But 9 times out of 10, the difference between looking good and not looking good is money. And that, like, you know, Jason Statham now looks 1,000 times better than Jason Statham back then. And the difference is literally he got more money. He's doing an LED mask. Like, he's fucking, you know, all that stuff. I was just like, wait, Jesus. Like, you wouldn't look at that guy and be movie star per se if you hadn't watched the Crank films. But, or maybe even the fucking American Italian Job remake. But, you know, many, many years later, he's like, he's our boy. He's Ben Wheatley's boy for Meg 2. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, he's currently riding jet skis and fighting giant sharks, and we're all here for it. We're absolutely here for it.
And looking
if
amazing.
If he doesn't punch that shark, I'm going to ask for a refund.
This is the problem.
Free press screening.
This is the problem with, though, because, like, Lara Croft 2 does, she punches the shark in the nose, right, in the opening 10 minutes, which is awesome. But the problem with Meg, and this is why big isn't always better necessarily. Sometimes if they had just like a slightly smaller shark, but girthier, we might have been there. But it's like how the threat, the physical threat is so completely out of proportion because it's a fucking giant shark. You know what I mean? Right. Like you can't fight it.
Can't punch the shark. Okay.
And you can't even have a good death because you're just swallowed. You can't have like your Quint and fucking Jaws go, ah! And the blood bubbles and stuff because it's you're getting chomped entirely rather than piece by piece. That's what part of what makes it scary to get in by a shark. Anyway,
it's a Jonah and the whale situation.
Literally. The other thing I will say though that you just mentioned about like from when the body hits the floor, when the body hits the car, the thing that really also gets me about this, and I know I touched on Stu Beattie before, but obviously the screenplay by Stuart Beattie. Ozzy, you've had him on shows before,
yeah,
have you not?
We had him on this. We had him on this show talking, confirming that Vincent's name. He accepted right. That it was Vincent Collateral was his name, as the internet said. And then he also said that Jason Statham's character was the same character
right.
in the Transporter universe. But more seriously, he said that his name was not even Vincent.
Yes. Okay. So obviously, yes. Fascinating. Brilliant. Love that. I also love the Vincent Collateral is so funny because it's really like Declan McGuinness, Jackal Core. So, you know, very particular to my interest. But I feel like the secret source of this movie, as much as Michael Mann is such a great director, is the script. The script is fucking tight as shit.
Yes.
But it's also a, like the length that you get is Michael Mann, like, you know, fucking mixing it up and doing some secret sauce with like, let me do this montage of people like fucking in LA for a bit. And you're like, okay, cool. You do you, babe. But the tapestry of the mystery of like these bodies are dropping. You don't know why Tom Cruise is there. You don't really know what Jade is working on. These are all just like conversations and things that are happening incidentally. And this bigger theme of fate and like destiny and people being destined to interact and collide with each other. And this like immovable, like this, you know, force hits an immovable object kind of idea. That only works if you're a very patient storyteller like Stu Beattie is. And the way by the time the second or third body's dropped, you're like, okay. And Ruffalo's like, okay, but you still don't have all the pieces. And then when he gets to the club and he meets Felix and him and Javier Bardem are back and forth, and you're like, okay, I get it. Okay, I understand what we're doing now. And it's such an interesting, like, I love an all-in-one night movie,
yes.
But something like this is so intentional. Like, it literally has to be all in one night. So by the time you get to the finale and it's back full circle to our girl, I'm just like, fuck, this is good storytelling, man. Like, this is
it's
one of those scripts you should study in film school because it just bangs.
Yeah, it's such an amazing script. And yeah, the way it's so perfectly structured and circles back on itself and doesn't over-explain. There's like a lot of dialogue, but it's not exposition-y.
Yes, 100%. And also like the dialogue is contextual again. It's like, he's a cab driver. What do people do to cab drivers? They have chats. They have inane chats oftentimes. And so in that inane chatter, there's like little nuggets of information and nuggets of gold.
And that's exactly what you said is the two things I want to tag. One was nothing makes me love what Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx are doing in this movie more than in those inane chats when you're watching Tom Cruise catalog things that he will then use later, say later to him, manipulate him, do these things. He's kind of like that whole thing where he's like, not six, not seven, or how long you been driving the cat? 12 years. And he's like, 12 years. Like, just like the little looks that he gives, because it's like in so many of those passive conversations, you're not as a passenger for all of us who've written in, whether you've written in a cab, cabs or Ubers, it's like, if you're having an inane chat or like this very passive chat, you're not thinking that the person is cataloging this information necessarily to use against you. So it's just this great twist of like this very common thing that they twist. And it's just such a, it really cuts to the core of why Stuart Beattie's script is amazing. But the other thing is also, as you said, in that moment where Jamie Foxx's Max meets Javier Bardem and they're in the club together, I just can't get over how good Jamie Foxx's transformation is from the guy who has nothing to the guy who's like, well, tell that guy if he keeps looking at me, I'm going to fucking kill him or whatever. And you're like, oh, like there are layers to Max.
How good Jamie Foxx, like, because I think Jamie Foxx is good at so many things. People often undervalue the actual quality of things. Because he's like, he's a fucking brilliant comedian. He's a fucking great singer. He's a great dancer. He's a great actor. But he is such a fucking good actor for you to believe that Jamie, he has all this drip, Fox, is this unassuming fucking down on his luck cab driver. I just don't think many people would have made that choice casting wise or seen the possibilities there. And then for him to make that switch in that scene, like, it's one thing to make the audience believe that he's that character, but then it's another to midway through have to do that little pivot where he's trying to pretend to be him.
You know what? You just nailed, I think, something that's why he was cast. It's not to be the cab driver for like, this is like a 90-minute to, you know, 2-hour movie, but it's like, it's not just that. It's, I need a guy who can flip from being a cab driver to like a cold killer and make people believe that and then flip back to being a cab driver. And it's like, this guy has got that range. And I think it's like almost that's the hinge point scene. I imagine that if man was casting it, it's like there's a moment in the movie where you can't just be a cab driver. You've got to convince cartel leaders that that you're a paid assassin and that you're ready to go at the drop of a hat.
And like on paper, there's just no way that you're like on paper, Mark Ruffalo is much more suited for the role of the cab driver and Jamie Foxx for the cop, a cab. But it just like that makes way the cop who's got a little bit of edge to him. That makes way more sense than what it is. But it takes Michael Mann sort of understanding that possibility. But also for me personally, this is my favorite Tom Cruise performance.
Yeah.
I feel like it's his best performance. It makes me a little bit sad watching this movie because we know how he feels about playing characters at this point in his career. The Tom Cruise brand and the Tom Cruise legacy is such that it is chances to see him play a villain are probably never going to happen again. They're gone. They're spent.
I know.
And funny as it is to see him play Harvey Weinstein in Tropic Thunder, this is a villain that was like not cartoonish, is actual a sociopath, I think is quite close to, you know, some of the worst stories you've heard about him and the Scientology movement and all that shit. But it's just like such an incredible, it's honest to God, such an amazing performance. It's like this guy has it. It's the difference between, I always talk about how there are people who are great actors and there are people who are great movie stars. And those are oftentimes different things, right? Angelina Jolie, I think, is a really good movie star, but I'm not quite sure she's ever, for me, been like a great actress per se. And it's very rare that somebody can encapsulate both. And Tom Cruise, to me, is really like the epitome of that. Is like, what's something like Collateral? And I know everybody, it's that fucking goddamn 5-hour one where he's like Tame the Pussy or whatever. Magnolia or something. Is that it?
Oh, Magnolia.
fucking goddamn.
What a way to describe Magnolia.
Featured on Pod Thomas Anderson on One Heat Minute Productions, the 5-hour movie where he's like, tame the pussy or something, Magnolia.
Sorry. That is that the one where Julianne Moore's like, I give these things to you. I give these things to you. You call me lady. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Fucking hate that movie. I hate that movie, but everybody talks about his performance in that movie being like him being an amazing actor. And I'm like, no. Watch Collateral, because he has 2 hours to cook and he has to slow roll the sociopathy and slow roll the malice. And that is fucking masterful. He's so good in this. Both of them. It doesn't work if Jamie Foxx isn't as good as he is. And it doesn't work if Tom Cruise isn't absolutely fucking on one. And the two of them is just like, what a beautiful two-piece. Like, they're going tit to tit.
They certainly are going tit to tit. God, everything that comes out of your mouth makes me laugh. This is why you're a best-selling author.
She's good. She's good. She's
Let
good.
Her cook.
Let her cook.
Let her cook.
Let her cook. Also a possibility for a title of this episode, Let Her Cook. That is also.
He's taking notes.
Taking notes. Crime is pain. Her cook.
Crime is pain. Just makes what's me laugh
fucking,
so much.
What's that fucking 5-hour movie where he's like tame the pussy or whatever?
It's Paul Thomas Anderson,
isn't
it?
You make me laugh.
It is.
I'll be honest with you. I could really take or leave PTA. I know he's another one of your boys and another one of like that legacy of like Michael Mann, PTA. Like that's important, but I don't know. Give me a Nolan joint any day over a PTA.
See, I'm the exact opposite.
I know. And that's why I love you. Cause I'm like, wow, the dichotomy. I found a chip from last night.
Dichotomy.
Yeah. That was one of the fries I had when I got home drunk AF. Yum.
Amazing. God,
I don't even know if there's anything more to say. You know what? There's not. We're going to end it right there because we can't top that. There's no way that anything we could say after could be better. Maria Lewis, we'll find another way to talk to you another time about another topic. God, it is so fun to talk to you about this movie.
I know. We need you to just talk
just come
about
in,
whatever. I
bucket of water, just tip it on the show every now and then, or come in like a fucking hurricane. We love you so much. Thank you so much. Do you want to do any active plugs? Because I know you've got like a virtual book tour coming up. Do you want to do any kind of active plugs?
Yeah, fuck. It's so crazy when you actually like have... when you actually have publicists do their job. It's been so long since I've actually had like functioning publicists on shit for a book that I've done, and Marvel's like, anyway, here's 52 states, we're doing it 52 minutes, and you're like, fuck, that's why they're the best. Anyway, my Marvel book Mockingbird Strike Out is dropping, I believe, end of June, start of July. I'm not sure on the specific date. So if you like superheroines, if you like Marvel comics, if you like Out of Sight meets Mr. and Mrs. Smith, that's the vibe I was going for with the book. So that right. drops then. Graveyard Shift. I think, yeah, that was going in and talking about that in interviews at the moment. It's been really interesting because it's made me very conscious of a generational gap, I think, between the people who are interviewing me and the in things that I'm inspired by. I'm like, fuck, am I old? millennial slasher, The Graveyard Shift drops in September. That is basically like Scream set in Melbourne. It follows a woman who runs an overnight horror-themed radio show and what she thinks is a prank when somebody calls in on Halloween turns out to be somebody getting murdered live on air, and a series of murders are happening at pivotal movie locations across Melbourne. If you don't know, now you know. Film history-wise, Melbourne's one of the birthplaces of cinema. The first feature film ever made came from Melbourne. We're tying all back, baby. And then in November, I have a book called Assassin's Creed Mirage, Daughter of No One, which is a tie-in to the upcoming Assassin's Creed game, Mirage. And it follows Roshan, who is Basim's mentor and who people might have seen briefly from the previous games. but gets a whole runway, gets a whole real estate worth fucking story, which we love.
Amazing.
That's amazing. I'm so excited.
And on this show, you can hear Maria's upcoming one-off essay, her one shot, if you like, on Reign of Fire, which I'm very excited about.
Was just so there was this big screen conference in Australia recently called Scream Forever, and I was chatting mad shit with somebody about some stuff, and Rob Bowman, the director, came up, and we had this really interesting conversation with this fucking amazing screenwriter. And so I'm thinking I might add a little bit of like additional content to the Reign of Fire audio essay, because we love an update, you know?
We love an update. We'd love it to be refreshed. Maz has already written the definitive sort of I guess account, oral history, if you like, of Reign of Fire. You guys can just search that, Maria Lewis, Reign of Fire. I think it's on IGN from memory. So you guys can go check that out, but I'll link that in the notes. But you're the best. Thank you so much for just coming and making us chuckle. We love this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Literally, we love you.
My favorite people in the world. I just loved getting to chat collateral with you. Illy.
And it feels like such a 20th century movie. It feels like something David Lean would have done or tried to do when he still had that kind of currency. And even then, he might not have succeeded.
It's incredible because, like, if you don't have time to watch all five seasons of Lost, you can just watch Fearless.
Not a week goes by that I don't think of the ending of Gallipoli. It's left a mark. A Year of Living Dangerously. You know, and then something like Last Wave, even, that's so deeply embedded with the land and the story of the land, the story of place. You know, I don't know that I'd seen very many movies at that point in my life that had such a down ending, and they had such a, you know, sort of strong sense of folklore attached to it as that. And something always so poetic and lyrical about Peter Weir's work.
Gallipoli was the first movie that ever traumatized me, and I don't think I ever really recovered from it. And I'm still upset that they played it in school. Like, I don't think it's actually possible to make an... They say it's not possible to make an anti-war movie, but I think Peter Weir pulled it off.
Yes.
Because no one watches that movie then thinks, I want to go to war.
Peter Weir is the greatest director that Australia has ever produced. Like, bar none, hands down. Like, no one else is even in the room.
I think you have covered some really titanic filmmakers and some really titanic films so far, but I truly think what makes Peter Weir special and what makes you doing this one special is we don't talk about Peter Weir that way, and we should. Peter Weir is one of those guys who I don't get why he isn't a bigger name, why he isn't more in that rarefied air, because I think film for film, he's one of our very best filmmakers. He has brought his A game repeatedly to many properties. There are films of his that I hold very dear. Fearless, The Mosquito Coast. I will fight somebody if they talk bad about The Mosquito Coast. It's, man, I love that movie. But in general, I just think he is a special filmmaker, a smart, lyrical, hallucinatory filmmaker. He's a very dreamy filmmaker, and I don't think he gets his due.
You know, Master and Commander is one of my all-time favorite movies. It's easily one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's, it's a grand scale. There's a historical backdrop to it. But at the same time, there's such an intimacy in the relationships.
Which I think is not just a great film and one of the last great epics in the truest sense. I think is actually kind of a sliding doors change point moment in cinema history. I think 2003, when that comes along, and it is an old-fashioned, you know, we don't make them like that anymore type film. I think if Master and Commander spawns a franchise at that point, the entire cinema landscape globally is completely different.
That's the movie that I wanted to see 10 of those, you know. I know they're big fans of Fast and Furious and everything, and God bless you, but Master and Commander should have been.
It's one of those things, again, I'm not a seafaring man, sir. But there is a sense of authenticity. There's a sense of really watching a genuine dedication to recreating history unfold on a big screen in front of you that can't help but inspire just genuine admiration and awe.
if you're going to pick a film where he really brings every one of his skills to the table, it's Master and Commander. I think you picked the right one, man.
Yeah, very excited to see what you pull out of this, Blake.
That's right. Our next series is Peter Weir and Russell Crowe's Master and Commander. The series is called Podcaster and Commander.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.